Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
President Bush continues to not let facts get in the way of his ideology.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Above Politics Show. I'm Homer Veit.
And I'm Martin Bain.
And, Martin, we have a special guest online with us, don't we?
We certainly do. We have David Icke online with us. Good evening, David.
Hello, Martin. Hello, Homer.
Hi, how are you? I understand we've been talking earlier. You've been rather busy, so we'll kick off straight away. And one of the things we did, we put a thread up on AboveTopSecret.com asking our members for questions. And there were several members who sort of asked questions regarding Barack Obama, just a couple of members of Human Descent, Tall Sort, Frank Idealist 35, and Speak No Evil 07, amongst others, sort of mentioned Barack Obama. And if you have a look at David Icke's website, davidicke.com, you've certainly got some interesting views and ideas on Barack Obama.
Well, the thing is that after 20 years of researching this in so far 47 countries and putting together the structure of how the few control the many, and it is a very few controlling the very many, you can't see presidents as a point, ironically, as a point of change or a different direction. What these different presidential periods are different phases in the same agenda. Now, the agenda, and it's important, there's certain coordinates that if you get these coordinates across, then the world starts to make sense. Okay, coordinate one, where is this network of families that are behind the transnational corporations, the transnational corporation, in truth, the political major political parties, the banking system, et cetera, et cetera, global media at ownership level, where are they trying to take us? Trying to take us to a point of a global centralized Orwellian state, which will consist of a world government eventually, that's the idea, which would dictate to every country. A world army that would impose the will of the world government on any country that wanted to resist. A world currency, which would be purely electronic, no cash and no individual currencies. There's massive implications for freedom of a purely electronic currency with no alternative, and a microchip population connected to the global satellite positioning network. Now, that's coordinate one. Coordinate two, the techniques, the two major techniques to take us there. One is the one I called a long time ago problem reaction solution. You want to change society in a way that you know if you do it and announce it openly, what you want to do, you're going to get a significant public reaction against it. So to avoid that, you, at stage one, create a problem. It could be a terrorist attack. It could be a government collapse. It could be a credit crunch and a massive problem with the financial industry. You then tell, through an unquestioning, pathetic mainstream media, the version of that problem that you want people to believe, i.e. Osama bin Laden and 19 hijackers that couldn't fly Cessnas, flew wide-body jets into buildings in New York and Washington, etc. And you're looking at stage two, the reaction, for a public reaction of outrage, of fear, of do something. This can't go on. Do something. So you can then go to stage three, which is to openly, through changes in society and legislation, offer the solutions to the problems you have yourselves covertly created. And alongside that is another technique, which I've called the totalitarian tiptoe, which is you're at A and you know you're going to Z. But if you know that if you go in big leaps towards Z, then the changes in society are going to be such, of such magnitude that there's going to be a reaction. People are going to look up from game shows, crikey, and the soaps. Hey, buddy, what's going on? So you don't, it's the bigger leap as you can, but not so big that you attract too big a reaction of what's happening. And so you go in steps from A A to B to D to F and all the rest of it. And that's how, of course, in Europe, we went from a free trade zone in Europe called the European Community or the Common Market to a centralized dictatorship, which is what we have now, and that's planned for North America as well. So they're the techniques. So when you start to look at this agenda, ongoing agenda for centralization of control, and in fact it's got to such an extent now that it actually has a name, globalization. And I have to shake my head sometimes, guys, when I see the left in politics, what you call the liberals in America, who dismiss any idea of this coordinated conspiracy to create a centralized global state. And then at the same time, they pick up their banners and they start chanting stop globalization. What do they think globalization is? It's the centralization of power on a global level in all different areas of our lives. So when you look at the presidency situation with Bush and Obama, because they're controlled by the same force, they're masks on the same face, but they appear to be different, and therefore people perceive them to be different because they don't realize there's a coordinating force. But what we're looking at with Bush and Obama is a presidential version of problem reaction solution. They brought in Bush because he's not the brightest man ever to walk the earth, and he was a front man for the force really manipulating events. And his role, or that eight-year period's role with the neocons in the background, was to create the problems. So you have the overseas wars, the military commitments, and you have now this enormous, and we've not yet even begun to see the enormity of this financial situation that's being faced. So then you then bring smiling Obama in, and he's your solution, because the public reaction to the Bush administration and to the situations that it's created is, do something, this can't go on. And along comes Obama, the savior, and therefore people are saying, well, I don't necessarily like him, but at least he's not Bush. No, he's more dangerous than Bush, and I'll tell you why. Bush could only go so far with Cheney because they were quite obvious warmongers for a start, and boy George Bush was quite demonstrably an idiot who did not have communication skills. There was only so far they could go. But Obama can sell a used car. I mean, he just has himself. And therefore, he can sell things in the solution phase of this twinned attack on the human mind because he has this ability. As long as someone's written it for him and he's reading autocue off the plastic screens, then he can sell a line. And that's his job now. He's come in to sell the solutions to these problems, which will be, and this is not prophecy, this is just understanding the agenda, which will be more centralization of power. It will be creating structures within the United States of civilian security networks to police the people. Because when there's a few of you and you're trying to control the many, you have to get the many to police each other. You're going to see many examples of that in America. And, of course, from a financial point of view, he's going to be slavishly serving the interests of the major, major banks and the people that control them, because they vastly funded his election campaign. And one of his major funders and backers is George Soros, the financier and manipulator of markets. So people are going to be very disappointed as the true Obama agenda unfolds, because he's not the man that he's tried to sell himself to the American people as.
I'm sort of interested, if you take that parallel that the Bush presidency was the problem, if you take that parallel to the United Kingdom, David, does that then imply that Tony Blair and Gordon Brown are the problem, and then potentially David Cameron is the solution from a UK perspective?
Well, quite possibly, because Cameron won't be a solution to anything. In fact, funnily enough, I was watching him on television yesterday, and he was speaking at a lectern, David Cameron, and on the front, the key word on the front of his lectern for, subliminal message to the watching public through the camera was, change. And it's, you know, they say, it was said that patriotism is the last, you know, vestige of the scoundrel, all the rest of it. But, you know, the use of the word change in politics is alongside that, because what they do is at any point in time, because the way the system works, most people are unhappy with their status quo. So anyone who comes along and says, I stand for change, is immediately has got their attention, because anything's better than what they have. Clinton constantly used the word change when he got in his first term. And now, of course, it's being used over here all the time with Cameron and others. And what they did, just a quick aside here, what they did with Obama in America was a massive mass mind control operation orchestrated by people that understand how to manipulate the collective mind, if you like. Because what they did was they got him to constantly keep repeating the mantra of, I stand for change, I stand for hope, and something to believe in. At no point in that entire campaign, both against Hillary Clinton and then John McCain, was it specified what those three things meant. And that was fundamentally important, because once he specified in any detail what those three things meant, he's going to lose a lot of his audience. So what you do, and this is the way it was done, make Obama a blank screen by just parroting vacuous words like that, but never saying what they actually mean. And what that does is create a situation where people project onto that blank screen, Barack Obama, what those words and terms mean to them. And in doing that, you create a situation where Obama became all things to all men and women, at least those that were supporting him. So that's what got into power, by actually saying nothing. And once he's got into power, of course, we've seen with his administration what his change means, which means a change to the Clinton administration in effect. But with the situation in Britain with Blair and Brown, I have to smile when I see Brown being feted as some kind of savior of the financial system in Britain and further afield, because of course it was Blair as Prime Minister and Brown as Chancellor of the Exchequer, as with the situation in America, who orchestrated through their period together of 10 years or so the deregulation of the financial markets that allowed this ludicrous mayhem to unfold across the world. And for Brown to be now claiming to be the savior is a bit like some guy smacking someone around the head with a baseball bat and then being feted as a hero for driving the guy to hospital. It's insane. So many people have kind of bought it, because his opinion polls have gone up. But whatever happens in Britain, whether it's another term for Brown or whether Cameron gets in, the same people are going to be, the same force is going to be in control. That's the point. But we have to be persuaded that there is change taking place when governments change. Otherwise, we'll realize the truth. We live in one-party states masquerading as freedom.
Now, David, I have a two-pronged question for you, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
First off, do you really think that Bush was that incompetent, or do you think just historically people tend to despise wartime presidents? And second, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Second, I want to know how all this plays into, now we know, we've heard all of this change stuff from Obama, and of course no specifics, but how does this play into the fact that he basically pulled in an administration that's nothing but the Clinton administration in a mirror?
Yeah, well, the first point is I do think that boy George Bush is of very limited intellect. But I know people who've met him. I know people who met him when he was governor in Texas, and he's shows all the traits of being the playground bully who's got the big father. You know, I'll bring my dad and all that stuff. So he's a poor or has been spawned out of a power structure, and he knows he has that power structure behind him, and he bullies people as a result of that. But he is a very, very limited intelligence, and his ability to articulate is pathetic. And therefore, as I said earlier, there's only a certain amount that guy can actually sell, whereas Obama is very different. He can sell things that Bush could never sell. I mean, I don't know whether you've seen the clip that's going around the internet. It's on my website, in one of the archives, of these young black kids walking into a room, marching into a room, chanting their, in worship, basically, to Obama. It's unbelievable. It's like a something from Nazi youth. And when you see that, Bush could not have sold the draft, but Obama's got a much better chance of selling the draft if that's the way they go, and I did probably will. And so he's a much more dangerous man. What was the second part of the question again?
As far as Obama, he's spouting this change, and then he turns right around and basically in his cabinet coming up, his administration, he's nothing but a mirror image of the Clinton administration.
Yeah, of course. Well, this was going to happen all along. You see, it's classic politics. Tell them what they want to hear until you get their votes to put you into power, and then do as you like. This is another reason why he could never, ever begin to give specifics to what he was talking about with these vacuous theme words, because if he did, he would have massively lost votes. Now he's in, then he can do what he likes, because we call it democracy, but actually they're elected dictatorships, because you can put a cross or something next to a name every 4 or 5 years, depending if it's in Britain or Europe and Britain or America. But once you've done that and the die is cast and the deal is done, they do what they like. I mean, there was enormous opposition to what Tony Blair did with the invasion of Iraq, but it still went ahead. There was enormous opposition. I was there at the time, by Americans to this incredible bailout, which is much bigger than the figures actually quoted. But it still went ahead because they're elected dictatorships, and that's what we've got now with Obama. He's in, so now the veil can fall. I mean, they'll still try to keep it up to sell his agenda, but for many people, the veil's beginning to fall with Obama immediately. Precisely is the point you make. How the heck can you claim to be change and new direction when you're just repeating the administration, basically, of Bill Clinton, which was one of the most corrupt in recent times, because the mafia from Arkansas were just relocated to Washington. And what's happening now with Obama is the mafia of Chicago is being relocated to Washington. And of course, Chicago is infamous as being one of the most corrupt political systems in the world, with the so-called Illinois Combine, where they have this cross-party network of people between the Democrats and the Republicans that stitch up the state politically and economically. And the Illinois Combine it was the breeding ground, the training ground, and the supporting ground for Barack Obama. And involved in the Illinois Combine were people like Tony Resco, the slum landlord and man who's been jailed for fraud, who was one of the major funders, supporters, and close associates of Obama. So any idea that this man stands for change is ridiculous. He's just another phase in an agenda that's been unfolding around the world and in America for a long, long time.
One of the interesting things is the US and Europe being controlled by the same people, or are there actually factions inside this sort of elite or world order? Because clearly one of the things I see is, you've got a fairly powerful faction in Europe, you've potentially got a fairly powerful faction in the US. Do you see any conflict there, or is there just one master plan?
Oh, no, what you have, well, in the end, if you go high enough, there's a master plan. But of course, when you've got people obsessed with power, they're going to fight among themselves because they want to be up the top of the greasy pole themselves. And so there's terrific infighting at the lower levels of this pyramid. And there are factions and there are tussles for power between them and dominance between them for sure. But if you go high enough up this pyramid, you reach a level where if these lower levels that appear to be the ones in power but aren't really, they're the mask of power, then they get their heads banged together and told in no uncertain terms this is going to end if it gets in the way of the agenda. But if you look at the House of Rothschild, which is a major member controlling force, whatever you want to call it, right at the top of the pyramid, then you have Rothschild control in Europe, Rothschild control in Britain. You have Rothschild control in America through the Rockefeller family, etc., and other front families for the Rothschilds. And you have not just Rothschild control of Israel; they created it. They created it. I mean, the fact that they paid for the Israeli Parliament building is just a massive symbol of the fact that it's a Rothschild fiefdom. And even some breakaway Rothschilds have been quoted as saying this. And so when you have this coordinating force that controls the Israel and controls the United States government, then whoever's in power, by the way, then that's why you never see a genuine condemnation or genuine fairness in American presidential, American administration, in the way that they treat the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. It's always massively biased. Why? Because the people that control Israel control American politics. And the Palestinians, and we're watching now this horrors going on in what is nothing more than a gigantic concentration camp, the Gaza Strip. We're seeing this going on, and the Bush administration, Bush himself, is just coming out with incredibly biased comments about, the Israeli government are basically justified in what they're doing. Well, clearly they're not, because, slaughtering civilians is never justified. But because of this controlling force, you have this coordination, not just of action, but of response to that action. And so you have the situation where if any other country but Israel was doing what it was doing now, say Iran was doing it, there would be a massive global condemnation. There would be calls for sanctions. There would be threats of military action. But if Israel's doing it, it's just vacuous words.
I'm interested, David, in what do the sort of this world elite hope to achieve by this economic recession? Is this basically the forerunner of some kind of plan to cull the population?
Well, there'll be many reasons for it. One of the things I've learned over the years is that when these things happen, there's never one reason for them. There's a series of domino effects, all of which are taken into account when the problem is created. But if you want to go to a major one, right back in my books 15 years ago, I was talking about the fact that part of this agenda was to create a massive economic collapse to justify the introduction of a global centralized dictatorship within finance. And when the banks started collapsing and what have you a few weeks ago, and for what it's worth, what I'm looking at with this financial situation at the moment, it's like when they have a controlled demolition of a building and you first of all watch the charges explode and go off, and then there's this incredible moment where there's this split second where nothing happens, and the building just stands in like suspended animation and then collapses. I would say that in terms of the financial situation we're facing globally, we are currently in that split second before the building actually collapses. What's to come is far worse than what we've had. And when those banks were going down and they were having these emergency meetings, Sarkozy and Brown and all the rest of them and American politicians as well, they were talking about the need, I think Brown actually used the word, so did Sarkozy basically, for a new economic global architecture to make sure this couldn't happen again. Now, they've not used the words yet, but they've actually described the concept, and they will use the words eventually, World Central Bank. That's what they want, because it's a simple equation. If you're the few and you want to control the many, you have to centralize decision-making. The more diversity of decision-making there is, the less control any centralized force is going to have over it, because it's like trying to keep loads of plates spinning on sticks. If you have too many plates and too many sticks, there's going to be crashing plates all over the place. What you want ideally is one big plate and one big stick, because you can keep that going from a central point with a relatively few people, because you're dictating to everyone from one point. And so this globalization, the centralization of power, is that agenda unfolding. And there's another equation that goes with that, which is the more you centralize power, the more power you have centrally to centralize even quicker. And that's why the momentum of centralization, momentum of globalization, is getting faster and faster and faster, as it did throughout the 20th century right up to now. And so this crash, this economic crash, is offering a massive global problem and tremendous understandable fear, anxiety, and stress among the people. And of course, if you can get people in fear of something, you got them, because when people are in fear of something, they immediately look outside of themselves for something or someone to protect them from what they've been manipulated to fear. So suddenly, World Central Bank, centralized control of the world financial system, you're joking, mate, we're not having that, we're doing well, everything's fine, shut up. Massive crash, you're worried about your house, you're worried about your family, you're worried about your future. Oh, anything, do it, anything to sort the problem out. That's the way it works. And that, one of the key motivations of this engineered crash is to create a centralized structure of control of the world financial system, which guess who will be in control of?
Okay, David, I have a question here, if you don't mind, from Above Top okay. Secret member Chops MC Fame. I hope I'm getting that right. This is a little bit kind of off the kelter, but along the same track. His question is, if the Catholic Church and a Pope are New World Order and trying to cut down the population, why does the Pope oppose birth control?
Well, you know, whether they're trying to cut down the population, that level of the agenda, who knows? I mean, I've not said that that's the agenda of the Roman Catholic Church. What I've said is that the Roman Church is the Church of Babylon relocated. And if you look at the beliefs, the symbols, the holy days of the Babylonian Church, they're mirrored, using different names, by the Church of Rome. And of course the Church of Rome brought in Christianity, which then became different factions of Christianity. Goodness knows how many there are now. It's still a major center for this global manipulation, not least through the Jesuit order. And there seems to be more and more Jesuit influenced people seem to be coming up with the Obama administration, funny enough, that one or two people are pointing out, Opus Dei and all these secret societies around the Roman Church. That is fundamentally part of this this whole global spider's web of manipulation. But of course, different parts of the web will have different emphasis and different roles to play. And culling the population agenda is not necessarily directly connected into what they do. They're just part of the whole web in which that is a part. So I've never said that the population agenda is directly connected to the Pope, who is another puppet. I mean, you know, he's there because he's there and he does his job. And when he's gone, someone else will go there. It's like just like a president. The real power is not in the Pope. It's in the people behind the Pope that are always there, no matter what Pope is in power.
Now, David, I want to just kind of lead you back into Obama here for a second. Just from reading your website and listening to you speak here today, you're tying a lot of things in together for me. Personally, and I'd like, if you would, for a second to expand a little bit. There's been a whole lot said about Obama being a socialist, and now I can see the ties along with what you're talking about with the New World Order and the manipulation and the advantages to a socialist state. But if you would, could you expand on that a little bit?
Well, socialism and fascism for me are the same thing. I mean, whether you are living in Nazi Germany or communist Russia under Stalin, I don't think the people, apart from the the rhetoric and the names given to the structure, I don't think they would have experienced much of a difference, really. So we give them these names to give the illusion of difference, when actually they're the same thing. And if you go far enough to the far, 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 far right in politics, say symbolized by Hitler, and far enough to the left in politics, as it's claimed, you go far, far left and you meet someone like Stalin, what you're actually meeting is the same point. It's not actually a straight line with two polarities. It's actually a circle, and you meet the same point. They just call it different names. And this is important with regard to Obama. Webster Tarpley, who's a someone who's written a lot of books over the years about American politics, the excellent book on the real background of Father George Bush, and he's written some good stuff about Obama recently too. He makes a very good point that when you look at fascist dictatorships, people think of them as a tiny elite dictating to the population. Well, it might end up like that, but where Nazi Germany and fascist Italy, for instance, started out was in a mass movement of the people, inspired, in quotes, by an orator. And, you know, the movement from the street put them in power. And then, after a while, the people that put him in power started to realize that they thought they were supporting one thing but actually got another. Why? Because the specifics, again, were never really articulated. If Hitler had announced in Germany when he was on his way to being, first of all, elected to power, people forget that he was elected to start with, and he'd have listed all the things that was intended and what unfolded, then, you know, he would hardly have been the most popular man in Germany. But he didn't do that. What he was talking about was change from the state they were in, with massive economic problems and the Weimar Republic and massive inflation, the restoring pride in Germany, just like Obama's talking about restoring pride in America. And something to believe in. These fascist movements come from the street in terms of getting them into power. And then once they're into power, bang, they go about the agenda that they had all along. And it may sound far-fetched because, you know, he's got a nice smile. But there are many parallels between in Nazi Germany in the same period, when Hitler was trying to come to power, with what's happening in America now. You've got the economic situation, you've got massive problems, you've got military problems and all the rest of it. And here's a man who's claimed to be an orator, as long as he's got his autocue, he's okay, who is talking to mass crowds and getting a mass support, an unthinking, unquestioning, almost messianic support, just like Hitler did. And what you then have is someone getting into power and suddenly, whoa, hey, it's not what I signed up for. And that's what we're going to see with Obama. And because, the agenda has a time scale and they want to push it on, and because the selling of Obama has given him, probably compared with most presidents, a much longer honeymoon period before people go, hold on a second, I think they're going to kick on after he becomes president the 20th. They're going to kick on. A lot of things are going to unfold in 2009 in terms of the agenda that we're talking about.
Hello, everyone. This is Homer Fife. My partner, Martin Bain, and I are the hosts of the Above Politics show here on AboveTopSecret.com. Alongside Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous with the ATS Mix, and Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock with the BTS Mix, we've worked it out so that all of you can subscribe to each and every one of our shows. Now, on each show thread, you're going to find two shortcuts where, when you click them, we'll whisk you away to a place where you can then download the shows with iTunes or with our RSS feed. And always remember, it's your subscription that helps bring our intelligent community to the entire world. So join us all in Deny Ignorance with the ATS Mix Show with Johnny Anonymous and Dave Rabbit. Listen and deny boredom with the BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock. And wake up and deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and yours truly, Homer Fife. Be a part of the revolution, a part of the Above Network, LLC. Homer Fife, and this is just the way I see it. Bailouts. Where's the money? Yep, I'm asking, where's the money? $700 billion plus, $750 billion plus, who knows? And what has it done? We're going to talk about that for a minute. But first, let me share this with you. My granny had a saying, throwing good money after bad.
And this is exactly what appears that we have going on here. Let's look at it, shall we? All right. At the beginning, at its core, what got us in this mess? The economic mess we're in now, I mean. There are several messes, but let's look at that one first. Well, first thing we heard about was the subprime mortgage disaster. Remember? Remember Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? Remember how we needed to bail them out, or some kind of the largest financial crisis ever would fall and the world would revert back to the Stone Age? Now, would that have happened? Well, at the time, I actually fairly supported the bailouts, but I still, in the back of my mind, there was this nagging thing saying, wait a minute, let the market handle itself. But anyway, next came the banking institutions with the same disaster cries and the same telling us that if we didn't give them money, then the world would come to an end. And then here come the auto manufacturers. Now who's next? Our own government. That's right. Our own government is bailing itself out. Now, wait a doggone minute. In point of fact, we are the people who are bailing out the people who are bailing out the people. Okay, that'll drive you insane. President-elect Obama has proposed an economic stimulus package of $750 billion that is in reality closer to $1 trillion. Now, the average human cannot even comprehend that kind of money. But, you know, he breaks it down for us, and he says this will produce 90% in the private. That's right, before we get anywhere. Yes, I listened to his radio address. He says this will produce jobs, 90% in the private sector and 10% in the public. Now, what's wrong with that? If you have to ask, you really need to go back to your economics teacher and just smack them, okay? How about a $1.2 trillion deficit? How about a dollar not worth of paper it's printed on? How about every company in the United States screaming, no fair, we want our bailout money too? How about the porn industry? Let's bail them out. Why not? Are they or are they not a multi-billion dollar industry employing tens if not hundreds of thousands of people? Again, I ask President-elect Obama and President Bush, what has the money, over $1 trillion so far, done for the economy? What's it done for you? What's it done for me? What's it done for my friends? Okay. Now, before we freak out too much, let's take a look at some positives, okay? Well, gas is creeping up. Yeah. I think I just paid $1.69 for it, here in the United States anyway. But it's still under $2. Groceries are up, but not that bad. I think bread's up a nickel, and milk is up a little bit. But you know what? Walmart posted 10% profits last quarter. That's right, 10% profits. Phenomenal. See, life isn't all doom and gloom. In fact, guess what? Unemployment is up. Employment is up. Oh, wait a minute. How can that be? We are at 7.2% unemployment and projected to have the highest unemployment rate since 1947. Oh, wait a minute. I see. Employment is up in government-sponsored health care. Employment is up in government-sponsored education. And, yep, you guessed it. The government is hiring itself. Okay, I'm still going insane because all of you said this wasn't going to be socialism. You assured me that. You swore to me that. Obama's called for 600,000 new government employees. That's just what we need. All right. Just a side note, has anyone wondered why this recession has hit us so close on the heels of raising the minimum wage? Does anyone remember the warnings from the economists? I do. You know, money's a little tight for me right now. I think I'll send a letter to Obama and ask for a bailout. Any of you want to join me? This is Homer Fife, and that's just the way I see it.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at abovepolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.